as a retired couple, this hits us in our pocketbooks, and we would like to have some fairness and equity.
The ACLU challenges a state tax law it says discriminates against same-sex couples. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 3rd of August. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the University of Alaska prepares for something it hopes never happens.
Definitely could happen anywhere, and if you look at the places it has happened over the years around the country, probably all of them said, well, it wouldn't happen here.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Alaska's Democratic Senator Mark Begich's decision to vote no on his party's oil spill bill contributed to the legislation getting shelved today. The Senate Majority Leader, Nevada Democrat Harry Reid, pulled the plug on the bill he had crafted and hoped to bring to the floor this week. Instead, it will wait until after the August recess, which starts this weekend and lasts a month. Reid blamed Republicans for not getting on board, but Senator Begich and his fellow Democrat, Louisiana's Mary Landrieu, were also opposed.
I could see that the leadership recognized they don't have the votes to get there because myself and Mary Landrieu were not supportive of the overall bill at this point.
Begich disliked the Democrats' plan to do away with a cap on the amount of liability money oil companies are responsible for in the case of a spill. He also disagreed with their model for revenue sharing. But Begich said with some tweaks, he would have crossed party lines and voted for a Republican version of a spill bill.
I don't care who drafts the bill. I don't care if it's a Republican or Democrat. If it's of interest to me, like on that Republican one, I like the revenue sharing, I like some other elements. I bet you if they thought they could get some Democrats, like myself and Mary Landrieu and others, they would have fixed this piece. That's why I think what we're doing is practical.
Begich wanted the Republicans to hammer out their liability cap details to make sure taxpayers aren't the stopgap in a... The ACLU of Alaska says the state is discriminating against same-sex couples when it applies a property tax exemption for seniors and disabled veterans. The organization filed suit in Superior Court in Anchorage today to force the state to give the full exemption allowed for married couples to same-sex couples as well. APRN's Annie Fight reports.
When Julie Schmidt turned 65 a few years ago, the Eagle River resident applied for the state's property tax exemption for seniors. The law allows seniors and disabled veterans to exempt part of their home value from property taxes, but only married couples are allowed the full tax exemption of $150,000 of their assessed home value. At first, Schmidt says she didn't realize that because she was in a same-sex relationship, she didn't qualify for the full amount. She and her partner, Gail Hsu, described the moment they found out.
We weren't angry. It was a sense of diminishment that we weren't, right. We weren't as important. We weren't as considered as other couples were.
Right. And it reduces us to being legal partners. It could be any two strangers that walked in and bought a house together.
Schmidt and Hsu just celebrated their 33rd anniversary. When they were approached by the ACLU, they didn't hesitate to become plaintiffs in the case. The couple says they don't know exactly how much money they would save each year if they win in court, but Hsu estimates it amounts to a few hundred dollars.
As a retired couple, this hits us in our pocketbooks, and we would like to have some fairness and equity.
According to the ACLU, the law is very clear. In 2005, the Alaska Supreme Court ruled the state couldn't deny equal protection to same-sex couples. Jeffrey Mittman is executive director of ACLU Alaska. He says the organization was hoping to avoid a lawsuit, but the State Department of Law didn't respond when the ACLU asked repeatedly why the exemption didn't apply to same-sex couples. Mittman says the lawsuit was the next logical step.
They're not roommates. They're not business partners, they're family. They need to be treated as a family. And that's all we're asking, is that the state of Alaska do what the Supreme Court has said Alaska does, which is we don't discriminate against couples.
Mittman says the suit only covers a narrow question of law. The ACLU is not arguing that same-sex marriage should be legal in Alaska. Julie Schmidt and Gail Hsu say that's fine with them.
One step at a time. This is important right now. And once this benefit is granted to us, then maybe there'll be another issue to take forward.
A spokesman for the State Department of Law says he hasn't seen the lawsuit yet, and the department rarely comments on lawsuits until they've had time to thoroughly review the legal documents. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
The University of Alaska plans to establish emergency response teams on all campuses statewide. A mock shooting last week on the Juneau campus of the University of Alaska Southeast was the first test of the University Emergency Response Squad and coordination with local police and medical professionals. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander was inside the yellow tape for a firsthand view of the make-believe terror.
A gunman opens fire on the Juneau campus of the University of Alaska Southeast. 8 people die and 10 are injured before he turns the gun on himself. In this case, the actor is shooting blanks, the wounds are makeup, some of the victims are blow-up mannequins. A glance out the windows of the UAS Morant cafeteria belie the trauma going on inside. A water skier on a flat, calm Auk Lake, the Mendenhall Glacier in the background. A scene that makes many think it can't happen here. John Pugh is UAS Chancellor.
That's the same with our staff and faculty until we got looking at it and talking more about it and realizing some of the people who do wander on campus and the fact that Alaska has a very open gun policy. Anybody can have guns. The truth is that definitely could happen anywhere. And if you look at the places it has happened over the years around the country, probably all of them said, well, it wouldn't happen here.
If this scenario were ever real, a campus community emergency response team would be the first to enter the crime scene after police have secured the area. A 22-member UAS team started training in November. Tuesday's mock shooting was the first time 16 practiced their skills outside the classroom.
We got a chest wound here. He's serious.
Rick Forkel is Emergency Management Director for the University of Alaska System. He says the team is trained to respond to various types of crises, from earthquake and fire to active shooters.
Look for survivors, triage the survivors, treat those with life-threatening injuries, and then do minimal treatment with what they got in their bag. But more importantly, they get exposed to the incident command system, which is basically the blueprint for all responders. It's the national standard.
When professional emergency medical responders roll in, the campus team has already sorted the victims according to priority of their injuries.
Connor here has a through and through and is bleeding through, so I'm going to seal him up. We need to get him going.
As the injured are carried into a campus courtyard, Juneau Fire Chief Rich Etheridge watches the handoff from the volunteer UAS crew to the professional EMTs. Capital City Fire and Rescue, Juneau Police, and the university have been planning the exercise for several months.
The big thing for us is trying to orchestrate that transition, you know, taking the patients from them. They go through and they evaluate the patients, bring them out and sort them, and then we go through and resort them. It just speeds up our process so that if something ever happens in the future that, you know, we've at least worked together on some basis and kind of know what to expect from them.
A single shooting occurred at UAA in the 1990s when a man killed his wife on campus. But University of Alaska Fairbanks Police Chief Sean McGee says none of the UA campuses have ever had such crime as the UAS simulated spree.
We've had incidents that have been, you know, cause for concern, but nothing like this. At the same time, if they can have this in a one-room Amish schoolhouse, or if they can have this in the township of Bethel, we know that it can happen in any of our campuses as well.
You know, this person has 3 gunshot wounds. He needs to get out of here now.
We're going to take a blueprint of this to all of our campuses.
UA System Director Forkel and Anchorage and Fairbanks campus emergency managers helped train the Juneau response team. Lieutenant Ron Schwartz is UAA preparedness manager.
And the advantage with this CERT team is that they are faculty and staff. They're already here all day, every day, working together. They know the facilities. They know the local responders.
Both UAA and UAF have campus police departments. UAF also has a fire department. But the small campuses around the state depend on local authorities. Forkel says first responder teams are even more important in rural Alaska, where public safety departments are meager. He calls it a community partnership.
We want to give them that bystander capability because we understand when these things happen, no matter where they happen, from New York City to Katrina to Virginia Tech, the first people there are the ones that unfortunately watch it happen or hear it happen. And if we give them a little capability, a little training, they can possibly save someone's life or preserve property in those minutes, 2 hours that it'll take emergency responders to get there.
A few minutes after the last ambulance rolls off campus, the actors wash away the fake wounds. Then they join public safety and university officials as they analyze the response to the mock shooting and its aftermath. Forkel says the Juno test shows the statewide program is preparing students, staff, and faculty for an emergency. But the preparation doesn't stop here. It's an ongoing process because it could happen here. In Juno, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, remembering the Delta pilot who died in the Denali crash this week.
That man would work, you know, he worked day and night, and airplanes was just part of his life.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
The victims of Sunday's cargo plane crash in Denali National Park have been identified. They include All West Air Freight owner and pilot Bill Michael of Delta Junction and Wasilla residents John Eshelman and Paul Quartley. The three were killed when the Fairchild C-123 Michael was flying crashed into Mount Healy near park headquarters in good weather mid-afternoon Sunday. Federal investigators say Michael was flying a load of construction equipment from Palmer to Unalakleet. Michael operated All West from an airfield near Delta, and as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, he was an experienced flyer.
Pilots in the Delta area are mourning the loss of a fellow aviator. Jack Morris, a Delta pilot who worked with Michael, says he was known as Wild Bill. Morris says Michael came to Delta some 10 or 12 years ago from the Wasilla area, and he made a living by, among other things, flying supplies to mining operations in the area.
When the Pogo mine started up, Wild Bill come in to the Pogo mine with his sky van and started hauling freight. And then he started, and he hauled some fuel and freight and stuff like that.
Morris says Michael was an ambitious entrepreneur who built an airfield with hangar and launched the business through hard work.
That man would work, you know, he worked day and night, and airplanes was just part of his life. And if there was a job to be done and he could do it with an airplane, he done it. And very, very experienced pilot and had lots of hours, and he was a hard worker. He was a true Alaskan aviator.
Another Delta pilot, Gary Hall, says he didn't know Michael real well, but he knew that Michael had earned the respect that Alaskan aviators extend to one another.
The kind of flying we do is very tight, very close to the margins, and there's an unspoken respect from pilot to pilot, that commercial pilots, that we don't talk about and we don't need to talk about it, but we know how hard each one of us tries to do it right.
In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The Department of Transportation will lead convoys in and out of Eagle over a damaged stretch of the Taylor Highway. The convoys, which will run Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week, leave Eagle at 8 a.m. and head back in from the Jack Wade Junction at 1 each afternoon. There's been no road access to Eagle since heavy rains caused washouts and slides along the 65 miles of road between the junction and Eagle back on July 10th. DOT spokeswoman Meadow Bailey says convoys were set up in response to local requests.
Recognizing that people need to get food and supplies and are trying to get in and out of Eagle. And so I don't think nobody's complained about it being a long, slow trip. I think they're just really glad to be able to have access.
Bailey says there are restrictions on the size and weight of vehicles being allowed in the convoys. No buses, motorhomes, trailers, overloads, or wide loads will be permitted. She says future convoys may be scheduled if necessary, but that additional contractors are being called in to beef up the force working to fix the road to Eagle. Four Southeast communities are getting new or substantially upgraded ferry terminals in the next year or so. Some of the money is coming from the federal stimulus program. One construction project will bring regular ferry service to one town for the first time in years. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Gustavus is about 50 miles northwest of Juneau, near the mouth of Glacier Bay. Its population of 450 is larger than several communities on the Marine Highway system, but it's only had brief periods of limited ferry service. That will change sometime later this year.
What we have initially planned is to add that as a stop both directions on the Pelican Run.
Marine Highway Manager Chuck Van Kirk says a new multi-purpose dock helped along by federal stimulus money will allow passenger and vehicle service from Juneau, probably starting late fall.
They will be able to go over in the morning, leaving at 7 o'clock to Gustavus by 11:30, and then the ship continues on to Pelican and comes back through late that evening, so it pretty much gives you better than half a day in Gustavus.
The dock, causeway, ramp, and related structures are costing about $17 million. They will also be used for freight and fuel. Service by the small ferry Lekondi will be monthly, at least for the winter, though additional service may be added later. Hoonah, about 40 air miles west of Juneau, is also scheduled for terminal improvements. That includes about $3.8 million in waterside work.
That was for rebuilding of the marine structure there, the catwalks, the ramps, the transfer bridge, the fendering, all that sort of thing. And that was, in essence, stimulus money.
Marine Highway General Manager John Falvey says the project should go out to bid within a month and be finished by February. A separate $3.1 million uplands project has already been completed.
It consisted of a new building. The building is actually in place now. The lot's repaved. Staging, curbs, gutters, sidewalk, lighting, fencing, the whole thing.
The dock work will allow fast ferries to stop in Hoonah, though there are no plans to do that yet. The Lekondi usually serves the town. Angoon's terminal will also get a completely new ramp and float system. Van Kirk says that could happen this year or next.
We gave the contractor a one-month period this coming fall in the event that he could get everything fabricated and get the work up to the point where he could remove the old transfer system and put the new in. However, if they couldn't get that accomplished, then we gave him a second period of time, which is September of 11, to be able to complete that work.
The $6.1 million project will allow fast ferries to dock in Angoon, about 55 miles southwest of Juneau and 40 miles northeast of Sitka. Construction windows are limited by fish runs. Ferry service will be disrupted by the Angoon and Hoonah projects. Smaller ships on contract with the ferry system will provide fill-in service. Annette Bay near Metlakatla, about 15 miles south of Ketchikan, is also slated for a new terminal.
We will have a completely new starboard side loading facility, ramp, and there will be also a waiting shelter there. There will not be a terminal per se, and of course a parking and staging area.
Falvey says the structure will replace one closer to the city, shortening the sailing to and from Ketchikan. It should go out to bid in September and be completed by fall of 2011. The work is expected to cost about $8.1 million. The old terminal at Port Chester will be dismantled. The route will continue to be served by the small ferry Lituya. The new terminal will be able to handle other small ferries, including Inter-Island Ferry Authority ships. The Marine Highway System continues to look for a new location for the Ketchikan end of the Lituya's route.
We're still in the process of what we call recon. We, in essence, started over again when it was determined that we would not be able to purchase property in Saxman.
That terminal will further shorten Lituya's sailings. The ship now docks at Ketchikan's main ferry terminal on the other side of downtown. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
Four airmen were remembered yesterday in an emotional memorial ceremony at what is now called Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. The four were killed in the crash of a C-17 cargo jet plane at the base last week as it made a training run. This week, the men posthumously received military and state honors. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Amazing grace, how sweet.
It was fitting that the service was held in a hangar. A huge C-17 sat on the tarmac outside as hundreds of military men and women, civilians, and close family members filled the building. Major Aaron Malone, Major Michael Freeholtz, Captain Jeffrey Hill, and Senior Master Sergeant Thomas Sicardo were remembered with laughter and with tears. Lieutenant Colonel Nathan Braspinix, commander of the 249th Airlift Squadron.
To the families of our four fallen airmen, we share deeply in your pain and sorrow. Please know that each one of these airmen was the very best at doing what they loved the most, flying Air Force jets. To the Freeholtz family, I was the first person to speak to Mike when he arrived in Alaska to start his adventure in Alaska. Mike loved and knew the C-17 better than anyone else here. He knew the airplane inside and out and top to bottom. He was the pilot role model to emulate. We miss Mike dearly.
Lieutenant Colonel Andy Hurd commands the 517th Airlift Squadron.
I want to articulate how very proud I am of Mike, Aaron, Jeff, and Tom. No four better professional airmen could represent our country better than they. These men were a team well beyond their capacity as a demonstration team. They built a leadership foundation of our two squadrons that made us one, Air National Guard and active family. They executed our country's missions together around the world, and they celebrated the greatness of Alaska together, and they died together. Jeff and Aaron were our squadron's operations flight leaders together. They were friends. They were outstanding instructors.
Meritorious service medals were presented to the families of the honored men. Governor Sean Parnell had these words.
Time indeed stopped for us last week as eternity beckoned, and its call hurts.
The governor personally presented State Legion of Merit awards to the families of the four men. Official comments were mixed with the remembrances of friends close to the departed airmen.
The last time I saw Aaron was Wednesday night. I just gave him the airplane, and we did the things normal crew do. I gave him a hard time, and he threw it right back at me. I slapped him on the shoulder. I said, "Go out and have fun. I'll see you tomorrow." He had a big smile on his face. He was excited to go fly. Aaron, I'm gonna miss you, my friend.
Coming here to celebrate the lives of these four brave men. I got to know all four of them very well over the course of my 2.5 years here, but none did I know better than Jeff. I worked in an office with Jeff every single day.
Tom was a man of extremes. He was extremely giving and extremely committed to whatever he was working toward.
Sicardo, like Malone and Freeholtz, was a member of the 249th Airlift Squadron. Hill was a member of the 517th Airlift Squadron. All had stellar backgrounds in C-17 operations and instruction. All were Alaskans. They will not be forgotten. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
One of the airmen who died in the crash last week, Major Aaron Malone, was also an Alaska Airlines pilot. Rex Gray was a colleague of his at the airline. He remembers Malone as a young, highly skilled pilot who had a good sense of humor. Gray attended yesterday's memorial service and came away with these thoughts.
We had shared an office space together, the flight deck of an Alaska Airlines Boeing 737. I knew him in a different uniform, that of an airline pilot. And that's how I saw him, First Officer Aaron Malone. We'd even shared the most intimate of times airline pilots can share, simulator training, hours of emergencies that are only survivable by teamwork. He was also Major Aaron Malone, a citizen soldier. Like most, I jealously guard my time off, away from work. Aaron belongs to a group of Alaskans that do a little bit more. No, actually a lot more with their time off. They serve. They guard. Almost 4,000 men and women of the Alaska Air National Guard and the Alaska Army Guard give up their weekends to serve. Not only weekends, but they are ready to deploy when called, be it for Katrina relief in Louisiana, Yukon flood relief in Eagle, Santa Gift flights to St. Lawrence Island, or Afghanistan deployments. They are ready and willing. There were four large photos draped with dog tags, surrounded by flowers. The four airmen who tragically lost their lives last week while serving. It was a photo of Aaron I knew, the uniform I knew, a photo from the office we had shared. The tie was missing, as it always is after the cockpit door is closed. I knew other co-workers served, but really never thought much about it till yesterday in Hangar 20 at Elmendorf. I saw them there, familiar faces in unfamiliar uniforms, captains and majors who stood tall but humble in military uniforms, young airline pilots who were also military men with touches of gray beginning to show. I was proud of my co-workers, the citizen soldiers. They work, they serve, they are husbands, fathers, mothers, engaged community members, and ready soldiers. They go to school sporting events, fish next to us at Jim Creek, sit with us at church, and go moose hunting. They are Alaskans. Aaron somehow found time. No, he made time to coach Little League. No doubt, in the next few weeks, I will again be sharing my office space with another major wearing the familiar airline uniform. The cockpit door will close, the ties will come off, the checklist will be completed, and we will be waiting to depart. It will be a good time for me to say thanks for the willingness to serve, to guard, to be a citizen soldier. Thanks, Aaron. You will be missed.
Rex Gray is an Alaska Airlines pilot who worked with Major Aaron Malone. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rosemary Alexander and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. We had commentary tonight from Rex Gray. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Working late? Hear Alaska News Nightly at any time of the day on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.